Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Live Through Jesus podcast with Courtney Gilman. On this episode, Rejecting God as King. This is 1 Samuel 8. God wants to be our King. He wants to be the one that takes care of us, that protects us, that provides for us. He wants to be the one that we listen to. The one that whose rules we follow, right? And that's how he had everything set up from the very beginning. When he pulled the Israelites out of Egypt, they were under the king of Egypt there, the Pharaoh. But God pulled them out of there, and then he set up their nation. And when he set their nation up, he did not give them a king because he wanted to be their king. He gave them leaders, but he did not give them kings because he wanted to be the one that they listened to. And he gave them their entire rule book, and he gave them people that would enforce those rules, but they were God's rules. They were not man's rules. We're not supposed to be going by man's rules. We're not supposed to be serving man. We're not supposed to be worshiping man. We're not supposed to be fearing man. We're not supposed to be subject to one man. We are supposed to be subject to God, serving him, fearing him, honoring him. And so that's how God set up the nation. And if you will remember, as we've been going through, that's what we've seen. We saw God use Moses to lead the people out of Egypt. And then when Moses died, then Joshua took over as their leader. And after Joshua, God began appointing judges. But now they are to Samuel, and Samuel has been their judge. But Samuel is getting older, and so it tells us in the first chapter, in the first verse of chapter 8, that Samuel is about 60 years old. We know this just from genealogies and the time frame. It just says in the verse that he has gotten older. And he has appointed his two sons as judges. His oldest son's name is Joel, and his name means the Lord is God. And then his second son's name is Abijah, and his name means my father is Lord. And so he has named them godly names, names that point to God, so that when they their names are said, that people are directed right towards God. And he has made these two boys to be judges that live in the land of Beersheba. But this has never happened before. Before this, God is the one that appoints all of their leaders and all of their judges. And God wanted it this way because he wanted to be able to select the man that was best for the job at that time instead of being bound to heredity. You know, there's no reason for, you know, it to just be the next guy in line. That guy might not be the best guy for the job. And so God wanted to select each person individually. But apparently Samuel was looking around at the rest of the places, and there were dynasties in all of the rest of these nations. And so he thought, you know, I'm getting old. I'm going to go ahead and appoint my two sons to be judges after me. But Samuel's sons were the exact reason, showed us the exact reason that God never wanted to do this in the first place, because they were not following after the ways of Samuel. So Samuel was a good judge, but his sons would not be because they were not following God. And so in verse 3, it says, his sons did not walk in his ways. They turned aside after dishonest gain, took bribes, and perverted justice, which is exactly against God's rules for judges. In Deuteronomy 16:19, it says, you shall not pervert justice, you shall not show partiality, nor take a bribe, because bribes blind the eyes of the wise and twist the words of the righteous. And so an unjust judge is, you know, worse than not having a judge at all, right? If he is going to just do what serves him best and take money from whoever, you know, this person may have done something very wrong, but if they can pay you off, then you get off scot-free and the victim gets no justice. And it says that that's what Samuel's sons were doing. They were just doing whatever worked best for them, whatever gave them the most money, the most power, whatever benefited them the most. They were not concerned about justice. And a judge not concerned about justice is not a good judge at all, right? And so they had been corrupted by money and power and did not act like Samuel did at all. And because they were so far from their father's ways, Beersheba was the worst place that he could have sent them to be judges, because Beersheba was like 60 miles south of where Samuel himself lived. So they had no oversight from their father or the judge at the time. And also, it was the furthest south that they could have gotten in the inhabited land. This would be like southwest from where the West Bank is now. And that was in the land of Simeon. And that was pretty far south in Israel's territory at the time. And so they weren't close to the people. They were not centrally located. They weren't able to meet the people's needs very well. And they had no oversight from their father. So it was the very worst place that they could have been sent to do this. And so wonder why Samuel would send them so far away to judge the land. And why were Eli and Samuel both very good priests and very good ministers of the Lord, and yet their sons were all bad? Why is that? What do you think? And then again, why would Samuel have sent them so far away? I was thinking about why that would have maybe happened, and I've seen this happen in our day now. Many times we are really good at our jobs because we kind of have a specific set of things that we're supposed to do. We know exactly what we're supposed to do. We become skilled at doing that. And then we also get off at the end of the day and we get paid pretty quickly for the job that we've done, right? And so it's easier to do a good job at our job. But parenting is hard. There's not a specific set of instructions, an exact way to raise each child. We have obviously great guidelines in the Bible, but we don't know every single instance how to do everything. And it's very hard for us to implement these things sometimes. But even more than not knowing exactly how to do it, it is so time consuming, right? It is a 24/7 job for at least 18 years, but kind of the rest of your life, right? You're never going to stop being that child's parent. And while they're living in your home, it's like a never-ending job. And so when you get off of work, you can kind of decompress and then go back to work and do a good job tomorrow. But when you're tired, you're like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, yeah, this takes too much effort. And so sometimes we're not willing to put in the effort that we should to be good parents. And since sometimes the effects of that don't show up for many years, it's hard for us to stay motivated to do the right thing, to, you know, figure out how to raise them well and to put in that effort, because we don't realize until later that we've messed up a lot of times. And so all of a sudden, one day we wake up and we're like, how in the world did we get to this place? How are my kids like this? You know, but it is oftentimes because we haven't put in the time and the effort that we needed to. But then at that point, it's like, well, now what do we do? Now it would be more effort than before, more thought than before. And we didn't even know what to do in the first place, maybe. So how do we know how to fix this now on the tail end of it? And then, you know, it's just going to be so much work. And so a lot of times people just think, well, there's not a lot I can do about it now. You know, they feel hopeless, they feel discouraged, and they don't know how to get out of it. And sometimes instead of drawing your kids closer and trying to help them before it really is too late, before they get out of your house and it's going to be much, much less influence that you have over their lives, then a lot of times you just say, I just want them, you know, far away from me so that I don't have to stare my failure in the face, and so that I don't have to figure out how to fix this, right? And then when they are adults, you feel like, well, I got no real influence over them now. And instead of, again, drawing them closer, trying to be an influence on them and fix some of the things that you did wrong, you're like, there's no point, and you'd rather them just be far away so you don't have to witness it, right? And so I don't know if that's what was going on with Samuel, but it seems very possible, because it's weird that he would send them so far away from him, both of them to the same town, all the way south to, you know, judge and have no oversight really from him. And so I'm going to read a couple of verses. We're going to do more in the Live Through Jesus Weekly Devotions and in the blog about this part. And so I'm not going to spend a ton of time on it here. Our focus on this lesson is going to be God as our King. But I do just want to go through a couple of verses that talk about this, so that if you don't listen to the other part or read the other blog, you know, if you happen to be in this situation, you can see that parenting does take effort, but it's important. And so in Deuteronomy 6:1-9, it says, "This is the commandment, and these are the statutes and judgments which the Lord your God has commanded to teach you, that you may observe them in the land that you are crossing over to possess, that you may fear the Lord your God, to keep his statutes and his commandments, which I command you, you and your son and your grandson, all the days of your life, that your days may be prolonged. Therefore, hear, O Israel, and be careful to observe it, that it may be well with you, and that you may multiply greatly, as the Lord your God has promised you, a land flowing with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house. You shall, and when you walk in by the way, when you lay down and when you get up, you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." So God's words are supposed to be so before you that you can never forget them. And then you're supposed to talk about them continuous. When you go to bed, when you get up, when you go by the way, and when you stay home, you know, all of the time, you're supposed to be teaching these things to your kids. And they said here, it takes diligence. And you can hear what they're asking of you. It's like, yes, that takes diligence. It takes a lot of effort to raise up a child in the way that is pleasing to the Lord. And so it makes sense that sometimes we don't do our due diligence because it's hard. It's a lot. We're tired. And we just let things go sometimes. The Proverbs also have a lot of verses that pertain to parenting and child rearing. I'm just going to read you a couple real quick. Proverbs 13:24. "He who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. If you do it quickly, it's much easier on you and him." Proverbs 22:6, "Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it." You won't have to do all of this when they're older if you do it when they're younger. That's kind of what they're saying. Work on it, teach it, and train it when they're young, so it's much easier when they're older. Proverbs 29:15, "The rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother." So that's us just being lazy, right? It's just leave him to himself. Let him raise himself. I'm too tired. I don't want to put in the effort. Let him do his own thing. And it says that child will bring shame to you. So don't do that. Ephesians 6:4, "Fathers, don't provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." Train them in the way that would be pleasing to God. And then in Titus 2, it just talks about how you're supposed to teach men and women to be. But in saying that, it says that the older men need to be sober, reverent, temperate, sound in faith, in love, in patience. And so you need to be that kind of person so that you are guiding your family to be that kind of person. And then the older women, likewise, they should be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, and they must admonish the young women to love their husbands and to love their children. That is something that we need to work on. That's why it says that we need to be taught by an older woman, taught to be loving towards our husband, not that, you know, we don't love them, but treating them with love and treating our children with love. And then it continues on by saying that that we should also teach the young women to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their husbands, that the word of God might not be blasphemed. So these are the things that we need to learn to do to be good wives and good moms. Likewise, exhort the younger men to be sober-minded in all things, showing yourself to be a pattern of good works, in doctrine, showing integrity, reverence, and incorruptibility. And so if we have these things and we teach others to have these things, then we will be better husbands, wives, parents. And so this is just giving us a little bit of insight as to the fact that these are things we must practice. They do take work. And then the last one on this is Hebrews 12:11, and it says, "Now no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterwards it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who've been trained by it." And so that's just saying, you know, no, nobody wants to discipline their kids. Their kids don't want to be disciplined. You don't want to do it. But, and you might not think that it's important. You know, it may not at the moment look to be like something that's worth the effort. But he said, afterwards, it'll yield the peaceable fruit of righteousness. And so it may take a while for you to see the effort of your work, but it will be worth it. You will be glad whenever you, you know, put in the effort to train and teach your kids to be the kind of people that God wants them to be. And again, it just seems that Samuel must not have done that. I mean, maybe they're just no good in general, but it seems like maybe he was, you know, not focused on that, and he was better at just doing his daily job. And so now we're going to go ahead and move on and read in chapter 8 in verses 4 and 5. And it says, "Then all the elders of Israel gathered together, and they came to Samuel in Ramah, and they said, 'Look, you're old, and your sons don't walk in your ways. Now, make us a king to judge us like all the rest of the nations.'" And so, unfortunately, Samuel's failure to raise righteous sons did not just affect him, right? Which it seldom does. We kind of know this also. But their perversion of justice just damaged the whole nation. And the people didn't want to have anything to do with his sons as judges. And so now they want a king just like all the rest of the nations. But in verse 6, it says Samuel doesn't like this idea. He doesn't think that this is a good idea. And so he prays to the Lord. And in verse 7, it says, "The Lord said to Samuel, 'Heed the voice of the people in all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they've rejected me, that I should not reign over them. According to all the works which you have done since the day that I've brought them up out of Egypt, even to this day, which they have forsaken me and served other gods, so they're doing to you also.'" And so Samuel was offended, and he thought that this was all going to be wrong to appoint a king. But God says, "Hey, don't be offended. They've rejected me. They didn't reject you. It's not because you weren't a good judge. It's because they are not satisfied with me being their king." And that's going to be the focus at the very end of this, is the fact that they were not satisfied with God being their king. So we're not going to spend a ton of time on it right now. But God said, you know, ever since I took them out of Egypt, they've been rejecting me. They've been following other gods. So if they're going to reject me as God, then they're going to reject me as king. they're not going to be happy with just judges like you are. And so this has nothing to do with you. Samuel shouldn't have appointed his sons. That's right. He shouldn't have appointed his sons. But the answer wasn't a king. The answer was a God-appointed judge. That was the answer. And, you know, Gideon, if you were with us back in Judges, one of the judges was Gideon. And after he defeated the Midianites, the people came to him and asked him to be their king and asked that his sons were. It says in Judges 8, 22 and 23, that the men of Israel came to Gideon and they said, "Rule over us, both you and your sons and your grandsons also, for you have delivered us from the hand of Midian." But listen to what Gideon said. He said, "I will not rule over you, nor shall my son rule over you, but the Lord should rule over you." God was their king, but they were rejecting him. They've been trying to do it ever since Gideon, and now they're coming to Samuel. And so this was not God's will. God had already set something up that is the way he wanted things to go, but he knew that this was going to happen at some point. He knew that the people were going to look at all of the others and they were going to ask for a king. And so he had made provisions for it. Even though it's not the way he wanted, he knew that the people were going to do it. And if the people were going to do it, then he was going to make sure that he at least set the parameters for it. And so in Deuteronomy 17, 14 to 20, this is where he set the parameters. And so I'm going to read that to you here. It says, "When you come to the land which the Lord your God has given you, and you possess it, and you dwell in it, and you say, 'I will set a king over me like all of the other nations around us,' then you shall surely set a king over you whom the Lord your God chooses." So God's like, I still want to choose your king. Even though I was choosing your judges and you weren't satisfied with that, if you want a king, then I still have to choose him too. And he has to be somebody from among your brothers. You can't set a foreigner over you. But the king shall not multiply horses for himself or cause the people to return to Egypt to multiply horses. For the Lord has said to you, you shall not return that way again. Neither shall he multiply wives for himself, lest his heart turn away, nor shall he greatly multiply silver and gold for himself. Also, it shall be when he sits on the throne of the kingdom, and he shall write for himself a copy of this law in the book, and from the one before the priests, the Levites, and it shall be with him, and he shall read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God, and be careful to observe all the words in the law and all the statutes, that his heart may be lifted above his brothers, that he may not turn aside from the commands to the right or to the left, and that he may prolong the days in his kingdom, he and his children in the midst of Israel." And so he's saying, you know, I don't want you to have a God, but if you do have a God, I still need to be the one to select him. It can never be a foreigner. And then your king can't multiply horses, which means build up an army. A glorified army, some power wing, basically, is what he's saying. Can have an army, but he's not supposed to be multiplying horses to himself so that he can gain territory and all of these things and get power for himself. He's also not supposed to multiply wives against himself, collect a harem. He's not supposed to have money, you know, all the money in the kingdom be to him and the people be poor. And then he says, and this person, this king, I want him to have a copy of my word with him at all times so that he can read this regularly and he can know my words better than any of the rest of the people so that he can lead the people well. So these were God's parameters. And then if we go back to 1 Samuel 8, beginning in verse 9, God says, "Now therefore, heed their voice. However, you shall solemnly forewarn them and show them the behavior of the king who will reign over them." And so Samuel told all these words of the Lord to the people who asked him for a king. And it says, this is what a king would be like. He's trying to show them, you know, right now, you just have leaders and judges, but those people don't have power over you. They can help you assemble an army, but they can't force you to work in it, right? They can't force you to be soldiers, and they can't force you to work for them. They can only advise you, and they can settle disputes among you, but they don't have power. You know, if the people don't want it, they don't have to, you know, the people as a whole, then they don't have to listen to them. And so, if you have a king, he says, I'm going to paraphrase what he says because it's a little easier than reading the whole passage. But he says, if you have a king, then he's going to force your sons to be horsemen and messengers and drive chariots. He's going to make sure that they make weapons for him and equipment for battle. And they're going to have to be soldiers in his army and fight his wars, the ones that he deems necessary. He's going to even, and once he starts doing that, he's like, well, I took the boys to do that. Well, I'm going to take your daughters too. And they're going to be perfumers and cooks and bakers and things for me. And then he's going to have freedom to take your land, and he's going to take the best of your fields and the best of your vineyards and the best of your olive orchards. And he's going to take those for his servants and for his armies. And he's going to take your servants as his own. If, you know, if he needs them, he's going to say, yeah, that guy can't help you. He's going to come help me now. And if that's still not enough people, then he's going to take the owners to work their own fields, but they're going to be for him because he's taken them. And he's also going to be able to take some of your food by imposing a tax on your produce and on your animals. And so basically, the king can force you to fund or do anything that he deems necessary. That's what it's going to be like if you get a king. And after he abuses his power long enough, you're going to wish that you were out of this arrangement, but you're not going to be able to get out of it. And so this is what he says in verse 18. He says, then you will cry out in that day because of your king, whom you have chosen for yourselves, and the Lord won't hear you that day. And so what he's saying is, I'm giving you the warning now. And if you make the wrong choice, then you're going to have to live with that choice because I warned you. I told you what would happen, and you're going into this knowingly. This is not an ignorant choice on your part. And so this is meant to be a warning to the people. The people should be like, yeah, that doesn't sound great. But listen to what happens. This is verse 19. Nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel. And they said, no, but we will have a king over us, that we also may be like all of the other nations, and that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles. And so Samuel heard the words of the people, and he repeated them in the hearing of the Lord. And the Lord said, heed their voice, make them a king. And so the people told him, fine, and he sent him home. And so, you know, what was meant to deter them basically seemed to be the exact reason that they wanted a king in the first place. They're like, none of this really sounds all that bad to me. We wanted a king to build an army for us. That was our whole purpose. And if we have to serve in that army, fine by us. We don't really care. And if we have to be his servants in order for him to take care of us and protect us, fine by us. We don't really care. This is what we wanted. And Samuel's like, are you serious? And so he goes back to God, and God says, give it to them. And so we'll pick up next week. Next week, Samuel does choose a king for them. And so make sure that you subscribe to this so you don't miss that episode. But what we're going to do now is just talk about why God didn't want them to have a king. He just gave them all of the dangers, right? So we know that those are the reasons that he didn't want them to have a king for their own sake, right? Because he didn't want them to have to live like that. But also there was another reason, and he said that earlier. He said they're rejecting him as king by asking for their own, king that they can see like the other nations have. And he wanted to be their king. God wanted to be their king. And that's the reason he said, you're not supposed to do this. You know, I'm supposed to be enough. And in Isaiah 44:6, it says, the Lord, the King of Israel, and his Redeemer, the Lord of hosts, said, I am the first and the last. Besides me, there is no God. And so God is the King of Israel. That's just a fact, whether they acknowledge him as that or not. In Micah 5:2, when it is prophesying about Jesus, it says that in Bethlehem, from the tribe of Judah, out of you shall come forth to me the one who will be ruler over Israel, whose goings forth are from the old, from everlasting. So it's predicting this. And then in John 1:49, Nathanael, one of the 12 disciples, calls Jesus Rabbi and says, "You are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." So they acknowledge Jesus as Israel's king. And then in Revelation 19:16, it says that Jesus has on his robe and on his thigh is written King of Kings and Lord of Lords. No reason for them to have an earthly king because God is king of him. And so, you know, God had delivered them from the Egyptian slave masters so that they would be free. So they would never be under the heavy hand of a king, even if it was a king from their own people. God did not want that. They were not supposed to fear another man. They were supposed to fear only God and serve him. In Luke 12:4-5, it says, "I say to you, my friends, do not be afraid of those who can kill the body, and after that have no more that they can do to you. But I will show you whom you should fear. Fear him who, after he has killed, has the power to cast you into hell. Yes, I say to you, fear him." God is the one that we should ultimately fear. And he's also the one that we should ultimately serve. It's good for us to work, right? We should work and support our family. But a working man benefits from his work. He earns the wages of his labor, right? But a slave, someone that is doing this for someone else, serving them, then their master is the one that benefits from their labor. They don't get any benefit from it. And that's not how God wanted them to live. We are only supposed to be serving God. Now, we do serve other people and God commands that, but not because they're over us, but because it's good to do. And in serving others, we are serving God. But we're never supposed to be at the servitude of another. We're not supposed to give ourselves fully to any man. No man is supposed to have full charge over us because no man has enough knowledge or perfection to be in charge of us, to have that kind of power over us. And God knows this. God alone is the one that is powerful and knowledgeable. And God alone is the one that should have all power over us. No one else. We should not, you know, no one else is worthy of our full service, our full worship, our full offering. You know, they were going to have to pay taxes to a king. And, you know, yes, that is the way that it's set up, but taxes are abused, right? And that's what they said in the verses. They said, you know, he's going to be able to take your food and he's going to be able to just feed his own servants with it. He can do whatever he wants with your money. And so, yeah, you know, we see that here today in America. Yes, it's good for us to give our tax money so they can build roads and do things, you know, that is for the good of all of the people. Yes, we need that. But has our government not become totally bloated and, you know, they just take our money and do with it as they choose, right? And so some of these things that they choose to do with your money, you may not agree with, but you don't have an option. That's what they were saying about the king, is that he has that ability because you've given him that power. God says the only one that should have power over the things that you work for is God, you and God, because God is the only one that can be trusted to not misuse his power, right? And so in Psalm 99:1-5, it says, "The Lord reigns, let the people tremble. He dwells between the cherubim. Let the earth be moved. The Lord is great in Zion, and he is high above all the people. Let them praise your great and awesome name. He is holy. The king's strength also loves justice. You have established equity. You have executed justice and righteousness in Jacob. Exalt the Lord our God and worship at his footstool. He is holy. We can worship a God like that, right? We can fall under the servitude of a God like that, a king like that, because he is all about justice for everyone. He is executing justice and righteousness for all of the kingdom. We can trust him to take care of us. Kings do just like Samuel's sons, and they abuse their power and they do what's best for them. And so we don't want to put ourselves in that situation. Psalm 101:2 says, "Serve the Lord your God with gladness. Come before his presence with singing. Know that the Lord, he is God. It is he who has made us and not we ourselves. We are his people, the sheep of his pasture." If he made us, then we can serve him. We didn't make ourselves. No other guy made us. Why are we giving him power over our lives? Don't give any person ultimate power over your life. God is the only one that is supposed to have that. Now, also, God already set their government up and he didn't give them a king, right? When he took them out of Egypt, he created all of the rules for them to live by. And then he gave them leaders and judges and priests who were supposed to guide them and enforce those laws. But no person was supposed to make new laws. No man was supposed to make the laws on their own. The people were expected to follow God's laws. And if a circumstance came up where they didn't know what to do, there didn't seem to be a law for that, then they were supposed to go directly to God and say, "What is the law that you want us to make for that?" They were not supposed to be making their own laws. And so God tells us this in Deuteronomy 5 when he gives them the Ten Commandments, just before he gives them the Ten Commandments. And Moses, he gives them the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20. And then Moses reiterates the Ten Commandments in Deuteronomy 5. And he reminds them of what God said to them then. And so in verse 1, it says, "Hear, O Israel, the statutes and the judgments that I speak to in your hearing this day, that you may learn from them and be careful to observe them. The Lord our God made a covenant with us at Horeb." That's when he handed down the Ten Commandments. "And he did not make a covenant, this covenant with our fathers, but with us, those who are here today, all of us who are alive. The Lord talked with you face to face on the mountain from the midst of the fire. And I stood between the Lord and you at that time to declare to you the word of the Lord. For you were afraid of him because of the fire, and you did not go up the mountain. But here is what he said. He said, 'I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Therefore, these are your rules.'" And the first one, he said, "Don't put any gods before me." And the second, "Don't have any carved images." And the third, "Don't take my name in vain." And the fourth, "Keep the Sabbath." So, you know, he says, because I took you out of Egypt, out from under that tyrannical king, I'm now your king and I'm giving you these rules. And I freed you from that. And now I want you to follow me. And if you skip down in that chapter at the end in verse 32, it says, "Therefore, you shall be careful to do as the Lord your God has commanded you. You shall not turn aside to the right hand or to the left. You shall walk in all the ways which the Lord your God has commanded you, that you may live and that it may be well with you, that your days may be prolonged in the land that I'm giving you to possess." And so in saying that they wanted a king, they were saying, "God's not enough. You're not enough for us, God. We want a king we can see, just like the other people." And they thought they wouldn't mind, you know, obeying this king if he took care of them. But here's the thing. God was already taking care of them. God was already fighting their battles. Why did they need a king for that? He was already providing for their needs. No king was going to take care of them and provide for them so personally as God did, right? God cares about every single person individually and can provide for us individually. No king can do that. And kings are selfish. And so sometimes they don't have your best interest at heart, but God always does. And so why would they want to take the kingship out of the hands who is the best caregiver, the best protector, the best provider, and put it in a selfish, incapable hands like a human king? Why would they want to do that? Just to be like all the rest of the nations? Don't they understand that they have something special that the other nations don't have? The other nations needed a king because their gods had no power. Their gods were inanimate objects. And so they needed a king because their gods had no power. But Israel didn't need a king because their God was all powerful. Their God was capable of caring for them. They had something that the other nations didn't have. The other nations should be looking to them saying, why don't we have what Israel has? But instead, Israel is saying, why don't we have a king like the rest of the nations? Why would they want that? They have something so much better in the Lord. They didn't see it. And that's why God felt rejected. And God feels rejected if we look to others and we don't look to him. We don't follow his laws, but we decide to make up our own. Follow a man that says this is the right way, then we're rejecting God as king of our lives. That is not what we want to do. He really, truly is the best king, right? He's the best king. And so why would we reject him any more than the Israelites would? Why can't we see that he's our best provider? He's our best protector. He cares for us like no other. So why don't we go to him? Why do we make up our own laws whenever God's already given us all of the ways to live? Why do we try to figure things out on our own? It's like Solomon says in Ecclesiastes, it's just a chasing after the wind, right? We can never attain what God has already given us through earthly means. And so why are we even trying? Deuteronomy 7:6 says, for you are a holy people to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you to be a people for himself, a special treasure above all the people on the face of the earth. That's what God had done for the Israelites, and they rejected it. They didn't want to be separate from the rest of the people. They didn't want to be a special treasure. They wanted to be like everybody else. Why? And why do we? Why do we want to be like the rest of the world? Why do we look at the world and say, oh, you know, as a Christian, I don't get to do that. Because they're in charge of their life, they get to do these things and I don't get to do these things. Why in the world do we look at non-Christians, people who don't know the Lord, people who know other gods, whose gods are as powerless as the gods in Israel's time? Why do we think at all that they have anything that to offer us, any kind of life that's better than the life that God's already given us? Any kind of rules, any kinds of ways of living that are better than what God already gave us, already lined out in his word, and that we could have anything better than him? Yet sometimes we just don't recognize who he is. We don't see how special we are, that we get to be his children. We don't see how special that is sometimes. We take it for granted. We just, you know, sometimes long after the things of this world. And it's like, no, you have something so much better in having God. And so I think that's what we can learn from this lesson today. I hope that it's helped you in some way draw yourself closer to God and make him more of the king in your life, because he really is the only one that's worthy. So, that's all we have today. Like I said, next week, we're going to talk about the king that God chose for them. So make sure you subscribe so you don't miss that episode. Also, if you would like this written lesson, then go to livethroughjesus.substack.com and you can subscribe, become a paid subscriber there for $6 a month or $60 a year. And you can get every one of these lessons emailed to you each week. You also get access to all the ones that have come before. So beginning with the Ten Commandments and then Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, and Ruth, and then the Samuel study that we just finished. So you have access to all of those when you become a paid paid subscriber. If you don't want to become a paid subscriber, you can also just become a free subscriber on Substack, and you can get the blog post emailed to you each week. And then you can also go to Live Through Jesus weekly devotions on podcast and YouTube. That's a whole separate channel. And I talk about the devotions there. The blog posts that I write there are made into devotions. And we just talk about what we can learn from this. And so, like I said, in this lesson, we'll be talking about, maybe not giving the effort to raising our kids that we should, using the example that, we learned from Samuel of what not to do. And so subscribe to that if you want to, or to the YouTube or podcast channel so you can listen to those. And then also follow me on all my social media at Live Through Jesus. And then I'll be posting clips from this and then also scriptures from this. So that's all I have for you today. And I'll see you back next week. Thanks and have a good day.